It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 In
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Criterion Project. This is the show where we like to talk about movies on the Criterion channel, and we have so much fun doing it. And I am film critic Rachel Wagner, and Conrado is here.
Yes, he is. Hello, Rachel.
Yeah, and we have some mayhem to talk about this. Some craziness to That's talk right. about today. We were talking about A Town Called Panic, which is a very absurdist, crazy animated film. It's going to be fun to talk about. But before that, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Can't complain at the moment. How about you?
Very busy. Very, very busy. I'll talk a little bit more in our recommendation section of kind of what's been going on. But but yeah, been extremely, extremely busy with everything, getting ready for the holiday season and for some travel. It's a lot going on, but very exciting.
Should we get right into it then?
Yeah.
Should we talk about what we recommend?
Yeah. What have you been watching lately?
Okay. Maybe I shouldn't have proposed to go right into it. I actually haven't been able to see a lot of movies lately. I watched The Legend of Drunken Master, which is a Jackie Chan movie, which is delightful and great. So if people haven't seen that, it's one of his best movies, I think. So you can check that out. But in lieu of a recommendation, I do have a sort of recommendation, and it's the fact that I am in a movie that is playing at the Austin Film Festival. So the movie is called Cram, and it is a horror movie about academia. So it's about a bad student and kind of like a haunted library. So I play a supporting role in the movie, and the movie is directed by a friend of the show and former guest A.B. Seidel, and produced by a friend of the show and former guest Trevor Wallace. So if you are in Austin on October 22nd, the movie will play at the Austin Film Festival, and you can go and see me on the big screen, and you could meet AB and Trevor potentially, because they'll be there. I think I won't be able to make it due to some prior commitments, but, you know, go out to the Austin Film Festival, get, you know, a glimpse of my face and watch a really cool movie, and then maybe you'll meet some of our friends too.
Yeah, hey, that sounds really good. Nice little horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, I finished covering the Toronto International Film Festival, the digital version, and there was a lot to see and talk about there at the festival. I mentioned last time the movie As in Heaven, which I, you know, I thought was really worth recommending. The documentaries were a real standout of the festival. There was one called Attica, which is a tough watch. It's definitely, you know, sobering, I guess, but it was very well done. I thought the interviews were excellent. The amount of footage they got of the Attica prison riot in, I think, 1978, I believe. And they had a ton of footage, and the interviews were really well done, and I thought it was very compelling. But then also there was a documentary about Julia Child, which I absolutely love and adore Julia Child. She's one of my favorite people that love her so much. And that was really fun. There's a documentary called The Rescue, which I thought was unbelievable. It's about there was a team of child soccer players that got stuck in this cave
In Thailand, I think.
Yeah, in Thailand. And they had these, they got this troop of cave divers from all over the world to come and lead this rescue. And they're really fun and engaging and great. And it just, the whole thing, the fact they were able to save these kids is unbelievable. And the footage that they got, I just can't believe it. because it's not like it's some like GoPro, you know, bad kind of footage. It looks great. I'm like, how did you get this footage in this tiny cave? You know, with it's dark, and it's you know, in the middle of an emergency. Like, I don't know how they did it. And that's when I guess disadvantage to digital festival is you don't have like the directors and different things like that, you know, that you can talk to.
Ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Cause I just couldn't believe the footage that they got. And it was just incredible. I really enjoyed it. And very heartwarming. And it's by the same people who did Free Solo, but I actually prefer, I liked Free Solo, but I was kind of conflicted a little bit because I thought he was such a jerk.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are we, should we be cheering this guy on? I don't know. He's really a narcissist. But this was way more sort of, you loved all these guys. They were great. And they were kind of like this thing that everybody, this hobby of mine that everybody would, you know, is always kind of criticizing me for and, you know, thinks stupid, now all of a sudden is actually going to be up to some good. And so that was really well done, I thought. And then also I enjoyed, as far as narratives, I enjoyed The Electric Life of Louis Wayne. This stars Benedict Cumberbatch as this man who, true story, who painted cats, and he actually, like, his paintings of cats kind of popularized cat ownership, like having people have, like, it wasn't a thing, I guess, as much in Britain for people to have cats as pets, and people loved these paintings so much that they started having cats. So if you're, this is like the patron saint of cats, it was really good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was well done, especially the part about his marriage. That section really worked for me. So that's some of the highlights of the Toronto International Film Festival.
Sounds pretty good. I'm very interested, particularly about the called the rescue, the cave,
the rescue.
Yeah. And yeah, I heard a lot about that. Apparently, very spectacular, kind of like you were saying, and a lot of people talking about it as one of the best documentaries of the year and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think that's one that people will want to check out.
One more that I really enjoyed is I saw a lot of artsy, you know, pretentious movies, as we would say. Mm-hmm. But the one that I resonated with the most is one called Violet. And it's definitely going to be very divisive, but I liked it. It's about this woman who works for this like movie production company, and she has this horrible boss, and she's just unhappy. And she starts all of a sudden hearing this voice in her head, and it's basically kind of narrating what she's doing. And it's Justin Theroux narrating her life. And then also you get these sort of images interspersed in between her life. And then also it'll start writing what she's thinking on the screen. So there's just, some people will probably say it's kind of gimmicky, but I thought it really captured sort of the feeling of anxiety and the frustration of having that kind of job, which is something I always connect with because I've been there, I guess. And I thought it was really good. And Luke Bracey is super dishy in it. And
okay.
So, yeah. That's one I would recommend. Just because I think even if you don't like it, I feel like you'll have something interesting to say about it, and it tries things. So I think that makes it interesting.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah. So now let's dive into a town called Panic. And I always say it's a hard thing to do a podcast on comedy because at a certain point, you either just think it's funny or you don't, you know, and that's it. So it's kind of challenging, but yeah. Why don't you try to explain to the audience what this movie's about?
Yeah. So A Town Called Panic, it's an animated movie from the year 2009. It is directed, I'm looking this up, by a couple of Belgian directors, Stéphane Aubier and Vincent Potard. I hope I'm doing like okay job of pronouncing those names. So it is a stop motion animated comedy that it's, from what I understand, it's based on a series of commercials that were done for Belgian television. And it is kind of all these kind of figurines like toys.
And they have a TV series of the a full-on series that they did. I have never seen the series, but yeah, they have an actual show.
That probably came out after the movie, right? Or before? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
I think it was from after, but mm-hmm. it became a pretty popular movie in France and in Belgium, and it's a bunch of little they're toys basically, right? Like these mm-hmm. kind of the main characters are a cowboy, an Indian, and a horse who live in a house in this town where everybody seems to know each other, and Rachel earlier said that it's kind of a surreal or what did you say? You said
absurdist.
It's absurdist, yeah, which is pretty spot on. I mean, the cowboy and the Indian and the horse are roommates, and their names are cowboy, Indian, and horse, and they the horse lives with them as if he was just another roommate, right? So actually one of my favorite things about the movie is just how the thing that I feel like it's always funny to me is what they do with the horse. Just the fact of seeing this kind of toy of a horse doing all this, being, you know, like contorted to do all these things that humans do, like being a computer mm-hmm. or drive a car and things like that. I just think it's always funny to see the horse mm-hmm. doing that. He's my favorite character for sure.
Yeah, me too. And I love my favorite gag and the whole thing is so he has this girlfriend, Mrs. Longray, and he agrees to start taking music lessons, piano lessons from mm-hmm. Mrs. Longray. And they go on this adventure, and wherever they go, there'll be a phone, and he picks up the phone and it's, "Are you coming to the lesson?"
Yeah.
That makes me laugh every time. Like it'll be like under the ocean phone. "Why aren't you here yet?"
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm coming." And that is funny to me.
Yeah. So it is kind of a series of absurdist adventures is how you would put it. You know, it begins when they forgot that it's horse's birthday, so they want to mm-hmm. do a gift for him, and they order some bricks to build a barbecue, but then what happens is they misspell the number, and so they get, instead of getting 50 bricks, they get 5 million bricks, and then that kind of like everything goes from there. I think describing the plot is just not going to do it justice, because it's all about the kind of manic pace yeah. at which it happens and just the weirdness of it all, right?
Also just the way that the characters respond to everything when they're like, "Ah!" you know, kind of thing makes you laugh. Like with every truck, because there's like
all the trucks that are delivering the bricks.
Trucks driving the bricks. Yeah. It's like and
it's so funny when the trucks are delivering the bricks and the horse is like been sent on a mission to distract him, so he's driving back and he calls saying like, "I'm gonna be late because of all the trucks are going past the highway and he can't make the turn."
Yeah, and then I loved the neighbor Steven.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, he gets really upset over the bricks, and then they actually like make him a house. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "You forgot the windows and the doors."
Yeah, it's a very funny kind of, it's a one of a kind movie. I think it's as far mm-hmm. from realism as you can get, in my opinion. And while still having, you know, like a narrative and a plot, which is just really an excuse to have jokes. And what it's good about it, I thought, what it's enjoyable for me as a person who doesn't speak French, even though the movie is in French, is the fact mm-hmm. that a lot of the comedy comes from the visuals and the way that the movie is animated and not just from the dialogue. So that makes it really, really enjoyable for an international audience, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you almost don't even need the subtitles because it could almost be a silent film, and you would, I think, basically get most of what is going on because it's so over the top.
Yeah. And a lot of the things, like we were saying, you know, the funniest thing to me about the movie, it has nothing to do with, I mean, it's not jokes per se, but it's clearly being done on purpose, but like just the horse and how they animate the horse, right? Just the mm-hmm. fact that you would have him all hunched over the computer. It's just funny. It's just funny to see how they twist these very rigid toys, because they are like hard plastic figurines, or at least they look like it. I actually am curious to know how they did all of this sculpting, because it looks like a lot of work.
Well, I think it was all it says in the Wikipedia is that the film was made over the course of 260 days in a studio on the outskirts of Brussels. 1,500 plastic toy figures were used during filming. So I think they were just sort of the traditional old school kind of plastic toys that you get. And I particularly thought that Steven and Janine were really funny. Like, they were just insane, but they made me laugh. I wrote down, Steven is a spaz. In my thing, there's a point where Steven ends up in prison and he's freaking out. And I also...
Yeah, not only does he end up in prison, but they build a prison around him the moment they arrest him, which is also surreal.
Yeah, that's true. And then you have Horse and Mrs. Longray. They're doing their dancing with the disco ball and everything. And that it just looks so weird that it's funny.
Yeah, it's very... The horse
is dancing.
Yeah, it's a very particular kind of humor that... I think feels kind of unique to, especially coming from like an American perspective, you know. I went back to see what I wrote on Letterboxd the first time I saw the movie, and it was quite a few years ago. So I really was comparing it to the Lego movie back then and thinking of how it compared in terms of like how, you know, the difference when you are not trying to like, to, you know, the Lego movie has so much branding in it because obviously it's a movie about Legos, but so that when you're doing something a little more to the side, a little more alternative with the same conceit of I feel like what the movie really is doing is kind of representing on screen the logic or the absurdity of children playing with toys, right? Which I think it's also part of the Lego movie, obviously, but the Lego movie does it because it's a big studio movie that is made in part or in large part to promote Legos. Is it does it with a very traditional story, and you know, it talks about the hero's journey, tries to subvert it, but it feels a lot very familiar in those commercial ways, whereas this is just a series of nonsensical gags one after another, kind of like very freeing. It really made me think and remember of when I was little playing with toys and just like going from one thing to another, not only because the characters are toys, but because the scale of the things around them sometimes reflect that as well. And I do remember being like a kid and being like, okay, so the toy is gonna brush their teeth, and of course I would use my toothbrush to play, and it was a gigantic toothbrush, and that's kind of the thing that they do in this movie too.
Yeah, it's true. The sense of any kind of logic isn't really, they don't really care about that here, you know, that randomness is almost encouraged. Like, you'll go from them being at the center of the earth to all of a sudden being in the Arctic to you know, all over the place. That's fine. It doesn't matter that it wouldn't make sense. I mean, and I do think that in that sense, I can see the similarity between the Lego movie. I think the Lego movie tries for more emotion, and I guess whether that works, you know, for a person or not is up for debate. But this, it doesn't really cry for like any kind of emotion. It's just a comedy, which in a way is kind of refreshing.
Yeah, definitely. It also reminded me, thinking of that, I think that it usually is movies from other countries, actually animated movies, that really I feel like are interested in capturing that element of childhood and childhood play and childhood logic. I feel like it reminded me of some of the best Miyazaki movies, like Mane with Totoro and Ponyo, which I love, and which also to me really feel connected to the perspective of the kid. In that movie, it's literal kids, right? And you kind of see their perspective of it. So maybe it's a little bit distant. This is like kind of like being inside the mind of a kid as they are playing.
Yeah, because when you're a kid, you can have your Star Wars toys and your Barbies and your, you know, whatever, all playing as part of the same story. And I guess you maybe see a little bit of that in Toy Story as well.
Right.
But yeah. But yeah, they definitely kind of capture that energy of, you know, if I'm going to want my characters to all of a sudden be in the Arctic, then they're going to be in the Arctic. And if they're going to be in a giant snowball that lands on the house, then that's what's going to happen. And it's really fun that way. And I mean, I really liked when they break into the scientist's lab and they see the whole, like, there's a meta moment where they see their village on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole thing, I thought that was funny. So they go and they're kind of like battling the scientists at a point. That's when they see the giant penguin thing.
The giant penguin thing also made me feel very much, reminded me very much of childhood, because it is this giant penguin robot that kind of like with its head makes snowballs and throws them. And that just seems like something that it would definitely do. Like if we had like maybe like a cookie jar or something, you know, I would incorporate it into my toys and would start and, you know, start playing and making like ices or whatever and you know, making it a part of the game, even though it's not supposed to be a toy. And that really reminded me of that too, because it feels like something inspired by that.
Well, and I just love the stop motion. I love stop motion in general. But even just little scenes like when Janine is making the sandwiches and the way that it moves and flows is just so cute.
Yeah. The way that it flows, despite the fact that it almost is animated in a way that shouldn't flow, right? Because it's all very crude and very static from one movement to the next, because obviously this figurines are very rigid, but it kind of gets its own tempo and it becomes its own thing. And it's really, really funny. Just the animation by itself, I think, makes it even funnier.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I liked when the house is hanging upside down and he's like, "You stole my walls." That was funny. Like I said, I loved the continuing joke of Mrs. Longry calling from wherever they were, whether it was in the ocean. He picks up the phone. "Why aren't you here yet?"
Yeah.
That was really funny to me. And then you have, I also liked the fact that the bricks were kind of just an ongoing through the whole movie. Like even at the end, there's all the bricks, and then they finally get them up into this huge stack that's very high, and and Janine's like, what is going on? That was good. And then there's the flood in the bricks sink into the pond, which causes the pond to explode. And they have this whole flood into the music studio. Everything's destroyed. But then we get the epilogue to the next year later, and it's the big party for Horace's birthday. They didn't forget again. It's just fun. I enjoyed watching it. It made me laugh. What do you think makes this a Criterion worthy film?
That's a great question. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking that there are a couple of things that I feel like all kind of animation fans like yourself and me kind of really try to speak against. I guess that these are these preconceptions about what animation is that we always are constantly kind of trying to point out that it's actually not really the case, which is like, for example, the assumption that animation is for kids and that animation should be funny, right? That's two things that I feel like a lot of people kind of try to say, well, animation is a medium, it's not a genre, so it doesn't have to be for kids and it doesn't have to be a comedy. You can do things like, you know, Akira, or like, you know, even something like Spider-Man into Spider-Verse, you know, which is obviously has its funny moments, but it's also kind of like an action movie, really, first and foremost. And what I was thinking about this movie was that it was making me also think that even though that is true, that animation doesn't have to be funny, I do think that animation is especially well suited to be funny. I think that comedy can really be taken to the extreme and milked for all its laughs through the medium of animation, which I think is very strange to me because, I mean, on the one hand, by drawing or, you know, animating every single frame, you have much more control over the timing of the comedy. But also, how hard must it be to time something comedic by drawing, you know? Mm-hmm. I find that to be an incredible, like, it's almost like a magic trick to me. Like, I can't even imagine how I would start to make sure that I animate something at the right tempo for it to be funny, you know?
Yeah, I did an interview with Steven Anderson, who is the director of the recent Monsters at Work shorts on Disney Plus, and I asked him about that how hard it must be to do humor in animation, because not only do you have to work within the animation style that you're given in whatever product you're doing, but you are with that humor for so long, you know, it's not like it's one day of shooting where you're doing a bit or 2 days or whatever. Like, you're working on a scene for forever. And if you think about, like, just how I think after a while, I would start to sort of lose confidence in the joke. And because you're animating it for so long, and that you'd have to have such kind of confidence in your script and in the ability to make it laugh. And he was saying how, yeah, that's definitely a thing that you have to kind of, you have to have enough fresh voices on things that because you get kind of cynical a little bit, with your humor after a while, and because you work on it for so long.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And but it's true that there is something special about the medium of animation and the ability to go outside sort of human restrictions to make for a laugh. Sure.
Yeah.
You know, The Simpsons have obviously done that for years and years. The Looney Tunes did it for years and years, have done it. You know, kind of the thing that you can have an anvil, you know, falling on someone, or you can have different things that obviously you can't do in
live action.
In live action.
Or maybe you can now with you know, computers, but it's kind of not the same. I think just the ability to mold everything so specifically with animation really does make a difference, I think. And it can make things very funny when it's done correctly.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's good to have these films in Criterion, or at least on the channel, because they do get missed. There's so much animation these days. There's so many films that come out that unless you're someone like, you know, me, who really hunts down these more obscure animated films, you're going to miss them. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful that Criterion has this art house animation collection. And I hope they keep it for a long time, because I just think there's so many great of these smaller animated films that deserve more love.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope that I get really sad when I see the animated movies that are coming out and they're all CG animation, which, you know, has its merits, but I do really love the look and the feel of hand-drawn animation and of stop motion animation in particular. Agreed. Which I just love it so much. And so I really enjoy and really appreciate when people connect with a movie that it's not a CG movie, which tend to be the more popular ones.
Go ahead.
No. I was going to say that the last thing I was going to say about why this is a Criterion film, I think it's also that even though the movie is very, it can look kind of haphazard or manic in a kind of messy way. I think it is very, very, obviously, like, it has to be with animation always. It's everything is very, very purposeful and very detail oriented, every single thing. And so this manic energy has been timed out perfectly and has been thought about. And in order to prove it, you can also see the other movie that this director's made, which is called Ernest and Celestine, which is completely different. Not only is it hand-drawn instead of a stop motion, but it's like a completely different tempo, completely different animation style. So you can really see how these guys are, using the medium of animation for all it's worth.
I love Ernest and Celestine. That I didn't realize that was them. That's cool. Yeah, totally different. Completely different. And there is a holiday film that they did for A Town Called Panic, which is also really fun. And so that's worth checking out if you can find that. But what do we think on the pretentiousness scale? I actually feel like this is pretty high.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just because it doesn't really have any real plot. It's very abstract. It's kind of, you know, different, strange. I mean, I feel like all those things make it a little bit, it's not going to be for everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that is I mean, I think that's for sure. It's not going to be for everybody because it is so manic and over the top. It's also very short, though. I think I do appreciate that it's only 76 minutes long, because I feel like it was almost getting to the point where I was like, oh my, this is too much of it. But then it kind of ends. So I was like, okay, yes, this is a good amount of this kind of crazy energy.
That's a good point.
But what are you saying? Yeah, I think
I'd give it like a 7.
Right. So I think that, yeah, definitely it's not going to be for everyone, but I do think that it's pretty accessible. I mean, it was a pretty big hit in French-speaking countries, and I think that because it's a comedy and it's all about, you know, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, it's all about whether or not it's going to make you laugh. I do think that there's an element of pretentiousness to it, but I would put it pretty low, like maybe like at a 4 or so, just like, I see what you're saying about it, but I do think that if you're going to enjoy it, it's going to be just like a guttural, this is funny kind of thing. So I feel that way about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so for remake, it's kind of hard to think about how you would remake something that's so unique.
Like, yeah, very hard. For you.
The best idea I was able to come up with, and it's not really a remake, but since this film uses mostly more traditionally like boy toys, like that I think it would be kind of interesting to do a similar absurdist take using more like traditionally girl toys.
That's interesting.
That could be kind of funny. I mean, you could still have horse. That could be like your
continued, a little pony.
Girls love playing with horses.
Yeah.
And you could have, you know, princesses and, you know, things like that. And I think you could actually make some funny jokes about gender and stereotypes and things like that, and that would be, I think, a funny way to go.
Definitely. Wow, that's a great idea. I think I love this idea so much that I don't even want to suggest one of my own, actually. I think this is brilliant. I think that would bring it to a whole other level of, you know, because there's so much to say and that can be said through comedy about the, yeah, like you were saying, the gender norms that are put on kids. And I think that if it was done in a, let's say, more Lego movie type of way, or by an American mainstream studio, I feel like I would feel like it's a little on the nose, like, you know, they would like spell it out. But if it was just something like this, in which is just like joke after joke, and it is more so the visuals and the style and the pace that gives you the critique instead of the characters talking about the themes, then I think it would really work for me, and I would be really excited to see something like that, actually.
I think it would be funny, and I think that they could do it in a way that would be tasteful and funny. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year with we're gonna get the Barbie movie with
Greta Gerwig. Is that a live action or an animation, do you know?
I think it's live action, but but nevertheless it's going to be interesting to see how they all pull off, kind of. I assume it'll have, you know, a lot of meta moments and a lot of commentary and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I'm picturing something like the Brady Bunch movie. I don't know if you've seen that one from the 90s. That's kind of like the vibe that I'm getting in my head.
Yeah, I can see that. So, yeah. You sure you don't want to give your pitch?
I didn't really have a pitch.
This never happened before.
Nah, yeah. Well, it's never happened that I come in into the recording with no pitch and try to figure it out by the seat of my pants towards the end. I was going to suggest something similar. I think you were absolutely right that there is really no way to remake this movie. What you can do, although your pitch is fantastic, like I said, but I would maybe expand on it and say that I would love to see is remixes of the movie. So, you know, something like what you propose of like switching the toys to traditionally girl toys would be interesting. I would love to see a version of it done in different styles of animation, or like with like, you know, playing with the tempo. I would like to see maybe like something called A Town Called Panic, the remix, in which you get a bunch of different animators to like play with it and do something a little bit different, like a kind of one of those omnibus films.
That would be fun. Well, we're very excited to talk about our next episode. We have coming up the New York Film Festival is coming up, and I had been lucky enough to already be planning a trip out to New York with my friend Heidi to go and support Broadway. And so I'm going to be out in New York, and I got two tickets for two of the premieres there at the festival. And so I'm going to be there for a bit. And so we're going to meet up for the first time, which is going to be super fun.
The first time ever seeing each other in person. It's going to be very exciting. A momentous occasion. And how are we going to, you know, commemorate this occasion, Rachel?
Well, they just started a New York City collection on the channel. And there's a lot of really good stuff in there. You should definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. But we are going to talk about the Best Picture winner, The Apartment, which I love. I think it's a great movie. I think it's going to be really fun to talk about it in person.
Definitely. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to be in the same room together as we podcast for the first time ever. I wonder how that will go. I'm sure it will go great. And you know, we're talking about a great movie, so we should be having a good time.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. So let us know what you think of A Town Called Panic. We would love to hear your thoughts, and let us know what you've been watching on the Criterion Channel, or if you went to TIFF, I would love to hear your thoughts on what you saw there as well. Yep. So lots of fun stuff going on, and make sure you follow us at Criterion Pod on Twitter. We try to have a lot of fun over there. And Conrado, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at CocoHitsNY. And yeah, if you go over there, you'll find all the other stuff I'm doing. If you're in Austin, again, go check out Cram. It's a great movie, you know, done by my friends. And I'm just not saying it just because they're my friends, but it's just a really fun, exciting horror movie done with an independent spirit and you know, a lot of great craftsmanship and fun stuff. So I hope you guys check it out. And I'm definitely going to be, you know, keeping you updated about other festival screenings or whenever the movie is more widely available.
Yeah, we'll put it on the links on our Criterion Pod, so take a look over there. And you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. Check all of that out. And also check out the Hallmarkies podcast. We are gearing up, getting ready for the Christmas season, if you can believe it. It's just September. It's coming soon. So very exciting. And so thanks so much, everybody. We'll talk to you all in person next time.
Bye, everyone. Bye.